What do you think? Do pastors and leaders talk about political and cultural issues too much or not enough?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, this is a subject that we often talk about. It's something that comes up over the years. It's something that pertains to my calling, serving as your voice. I need a voice to serve as your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. It's the question of pastors and leaders speaking up, addressing cultural issues, addressing political issues. When does that hurt our witness? When does that distract us from what really matters? When is that something essential for the good of the body? Do we make a distinction between culture and politics? Does the gospel intersect both? We'll talk about that. And I want to get your take, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. We'll also talk about other things happening in the news around us. But before we get to any of that, breaking news, an explosion, large explosion in Beirut, Lebanon. From the videos, it looks like there could be thousands of people killed. They're reporting so far at least 10 killed. I can't believe the number would be that low based on what I've seen and heard. But those watching, I want you to see this. Those listening, I want you to hear this. This just happened within the last hour in Beirut, and don't know what caused the explosion, but check this out. Yeah, that's just a tiny little glimpse. And that's from a distance. You see this massive cloud erupt, and then the sound of an explosion, the sound wave hitting. It's very, very intense, the different clips I've watched. Again, don't know what caused this. As news breaks, my team will get it to me if we have more details. But just watching it reminded me of how much suffering and pain is in the world and how much of it is imposed by us. The wars, the bombings, the killings. Yeah, there are times when it's necessary to stop the onslaught of evil, and you have to get involved in a just war, like the Allies fighting against the Nazis and fighting against Imperial Japan in World War II. But so much of suffering is, yeah. Okay, now looking at least 25 killed, 2,200 injured. That's a lot of injured people. God have mercy in the midst of this blast. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, even though I'm an ordained minister, even though I have traveled around the world preaching and preached thousands upon thousands of messages, and I've led ministry schools and have taught at different seminaries, even though I've done all that, and many of my books are on subjects of revival and spiritual growth and holiness and repentance and things like that, I'm also a radio talk show host. I'm also a columnist. I write for secular as well as Christian websites. And obviously with talk radio, our goal is not to be exclusively Bible, exclusively theology. If that was our calling, that's what we would do. That's who we would be. But my calling and the calling of this ministry intersects with these other areas as well, the areas of culture, politics. And we talk about things. We talk about can you be gay and Christian? And we talk about parents with kids who identify as gay and transgender issues, because those are issues in this world in which we live. And the gospel intersects with that. And abortion and the challenges of single moms raising kids that they weren't expecting, and the gospel intersects with that as well. Does it stop there? Does it also intersect with the White House, with Congress, with the Supreme Court? Where does one draw the line? And what about a local church pastor? How much should a local church pastor talk about these kinds of things? And how much should they focus, quote, on preaching the gospel? And is it that they don't want to distract from what really matters? Or is it that they're afraid to touch on controversial issues? Or does it vary from calling to calling, church to church, leader to leader? How do you feel as congregants, as members of churches and congregations, how do you feel in terms of what's necessary for you, for your life, for your family? What do you need in terms of being equipped? What is helpful and useful for you? Let's say your mom, happily married, 20 years, raising three teenagers now. You work part-time out of the house, husband full-time out of the house. Normal life situation for many Americans here. What do you feel is important to be getting from your local congregation? Do you want to have anything that intersects with politics? Do you want teaching that will help you know how to vote or give you guidelines? Or how to pray for the president, or should we support? Would you like it if your pastor said, I'm voting for this one or that one? Would that be helpful, or would that be a total distraction and divisive? Or what about cultural issues? Okay, right now, the race issue. Should churches be talking about that? And what's a legitimate issue? Where is there need for reconciliation? And where are things being overplayed by radical movements? Let the world focus on that. Let's just meet with the Lord and worship God and be in the Word and pray. And you say, okay, I'm all for that, but then I walk out of there and my kids are coming home with questions from school and they're getting bombarded with the sex ed curriculum in school and they're under pressure about this view and that view. And so how much, what's right, what's wrong? I just posted this on Twitter, I mean, immediately before the show started. So I don't even know if we have, let's just see here. Yeah, our first 106 votes. Should pastors and Christian leaders speak more or less on cultural and political issues? And Twitter allows four choices. So here's what I put up. Should pastors and Christian leaders speak more or less about cultural and political issues? More on both. That's one choice. Another choice, only more on cultural. Another, only more on political. And then the last, less on both. Again, four choices try to at least give a little bit of a spread here. So you can join in on Twitter. You can call in 866-34-TRUTH. Austin on Facebook, I think the gospel should be the focus always, so only talk about politics if we keep the focus on the gospel, if that makes sense. Yeah, Austin, many pastors and leaders would say, we go through the Bible. We're teaching on the book of Romans. We're going through the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. We're in the Psalms. And to the extent that what's happening in the world around us intersects with what we're teaching on, we address it, but we keep our focus there. Some might say, yeah, but will you ever really address the issues that need to be addressed? Again, I think we would all agree on where the focus needs to be. How much intersection is there? I know my calling is different. If I was exclusively traveling, stirring hearts for revival, I would talk about what's happening in the world around us, but mainly to get us to go after God, to seek Him earnestly, to cry out for renewal in our own lives and for our effective witness in the society around us. That would be my posture. That would be my burden. But with my calling to also be your voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution, in other words, God called me to do that. That's why I'm doing this. It's not I'm doing this because I have a radio show. I'm doing radio because I have this calling as well. So yes, I write and preach on revival. And when I travel out, I'm primarily calling people to go after God and seek His face. But even overseas, different cultures, different countries, they want to know what's happening in America. What's the political situation in America? How is the church addressing it? What's happening with radical left activism in your country? What are you doing? What can we learn here in our country? Because it's coming our way. So this is the world in which we live. This is the world in which we live. And I have no question in my mind that some of us are too politically minded. In my opinion, I'm not naming names. It's not my place to do that here. But in my opinion, some of our leaders have made it more difficult to just be gospel oriented because they are so politically oriented. And it's almost as if Trump is the man. And before that, for others, Obama was the man. And we can get so caught up with that. To me, it can be out of bounds. Again, that's my opinion, my view. And on the other hand, I see so many just not wanting to touch the pressing issues around us that their people, the congregants, are not well equipped. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's dive right in and go to the phone, starting with Danny in New York City. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
I was wondering if you thought there's a parallel between the Canaanites worshiping Baal, where they would sacrifice their children and they would heat up the often made of bronze, the statue of Baal, into hot, molten bronze metal. They'll let the babies, you know, sizzle in the arms of their god Baal. How God got so angry with the Canaanites that he gave them away, gave them to the Israelites. And the parallel today of how we continue to tolerate the killing of babies, and how would we expect God to bless us if this continued? And just the lack of courage to speak out against it in our churches without, you know, the fear of losing a congregation. But if it's true that we worship a God who created us and had a plan for us and the purpose, and we were fearfully and awesomely made by a mm-hmm. God, how can we not speak out? And how can we expect the U.S. to continue to be blessed by God if this continues?
Danny, I'm with you 100%. 100%. And when we are not just having abortions, but shouting abortions, shout the abortion movement, and selling baby parts for profit, how can we think that we'll be treated differently than those that fell under judgment, sacrificing to Moloch and Baal and Kronos and these other deities, these demons? I'm with you totally, sir. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining me today on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Look, in my new book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test?, I have a whole chapter that asks the question, has our support for President Trump hurt our witness? In some ways, it has. I absolutely believe that. The degree to which evangelical leaders have been associated with President Trump, have defended him at every turn, have made clear that he's the man, to the extent we've done that in a non-critical way, we haven't distanced ourselves from the things he does that are ugly and wrong and destructive, yeah, it has hurt our witness. I've mentioned this, but a friend of mine who's an evangelist in Australia said that it's made it more, he's American, he said it's made it more difficult for him to share the gospel there because there's this immediate association, well, evangelicals are like Trump. On the other hand, to think that you can't vote for the candidate that you feel is best and still maintain your witness, I say you absolutely can maintain your witness. You can explain, hey, here are the reasons why I cast my vote. You can make a very reasonable case for why you vote a particular way without selling your soul in the process. And you can maintain your Christian witness to friends, neighbors, loved ones, coworkers, those you meet on social media. You can explain, I vote like this, but here's what matters, and this is the ultimate issue for me, and point people to Jesus. The issue is, are you being adequately equipped to do so? And look, take your average local pastor. Your average local pastor is juggling lots of different things at the same time. Your average local pastor in a smaller church is doing a ton of stuff by himself, all right? And it may be visiting someone in the hospital with cancer 1 hour, and the next hour sitting down with a few people working out budget and trying to figure out how much money has to be prayed in to meet the budget for next month. And then what about the children's program? And then what about community outreach? And then what about preparing sermons and Bible studies? And that's a full plate. The larger you get, the more staff you have, but there's a lot going on. Are we now expecting the pastor to be a political pundit? Are we now expecting the pastor to have a mastery of all the cultural issues? In my mind, no. However, because we live in this world and the gospel intersects with every area of society, there should be some equipping of the saints. Here, for example, can you be effectively leading a congregation and not deal with the issue of sexual sin and pornography? I mean, sexual sin is mentioned often in the Bible. So therefore, if we're teaching through Scripture, we'll deal with that and principles of holiness and purity and the importance of the marital bond and things like that. But what about the epidemic of pornography? I think I called it pandemic the other day on the air. I mean, massive destructive influence in the church, even among leaders. Do we just make like it doesn't exist? One brother I know in the Charlotte, North Carolina area had come out of homosexuality himself, had a counseling ministry, happily married now to his wife. And I said to him, you must get lots of referrals because you have a counseling ministry. You've really helped a lot of people dealing with unwanted same-sex attraction. And your average pastor at church may feel ill-equipped to deal with some of the specific things, challenges that come up. And he said, no, when I went to churches, I'd go to different churches. And thankfully, not all churches like this are in Charlotte. But his own experience, he said, I went to these different churches, and I told the pastor, this is what we do. We have a counseling ministry. You know, people can pay for our services. It's professional counseling for people struggling with unwanted same-sex attraction, gender, you know, whatever. Pastor said, oh, we don't have that problem in our church. What? You don't know how many people are struggling in your own midst? You don't know how many people have family members that are struggling and issues are coming up? Almost invariably, when I'm asked to speak to these issues in a church setting, a pastor will have me come in and do a special message on this, and we have Q&A afterwards or just after the service. There's a line of people wanting to talk to me, many of them in tears, going through difficult personal issues, some in their own lives, some in their immediate families. So you say, well, I can't do everything. Well, then you can bring others in that can help, or you can refer people to resources. I'm giving you my views. I want to hear yours. 866-34-TRUTH. And if you're a pastor saying, you know, man, it's just not that easy. Hey, call. Let's talk. I want to help. I don't want to hurt. I want to lift up, strengthen, and encourage. All right, we're going to go to the phones, but let me just give you a quick reminder that we do what we do with your support. We are listener and viewer supported. We don't make money from advertising. We don't have corporate sponsors. We are supported by you. So if you enjoy the broadcast and want to say, Dr. Brown, we're standing with you, thank you. We want you to reach even more people because we have many open doors ahead of us. Just if you're watching on Facebook on the Ask Dr. Brown page, there's a donate button. Just click on that. Any gift of any size makes a difference. Maybe you just want to give a few dollars each month. Just make it a habit. Do that. That'll be a great blessing. If you're watching on YouTube, beneath the chat box, there is a dollar sign. Click on that for your donation, or just go to our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate. Okay, back to the phones. Let's go to Kokomo, Indiana. Brenda, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello. Thank you so much. For months, the Lord has put a song on my heart, Rise Up, O Men of God. Mm. And right now, the body needs the men of God to stand up and help us know how to navigate through these troubling times and how to witness to people through these troubling times. And if they're not teaching on those issues, you know, cultural and political issues, on how to actually witness through those and not actually promote either one side or the other, but how to witness through those to people, then we don't know what to do. And we're just floundering in it. And you know, the apostles, they taught their churches and wrote to their churches about how to navigate through those desperate times and seek Jesus in them and let him lead. And I just feel the men of God really need to rise up in that and teach us, you know, what, and seek God to teach us how to do that and how to be a light and salt in this time. Because it's really hard for us to witness to people with all of the stuff going on when what we're getting at church is not that.
Okay, you bring up a massively important issue, Brenda, massively, which is our very witness. In other words, we often think, well, if we talk about political, cultural issues, it will hurt our witness. What you're saying is these are the issues that come up constantly when we witness. Just the issue of homosexuality alone. You know, why are you bigot? Why are you so hateful? Why do you hold to this outdated, outmoded book? You know, now with everything going on in America and revisiting our past with slavery, do we know how to address that? Well, the Bible promotes slavery. How could I believe in that book? So for the sake of our gospel witness, our ability to speak to the world about Jesus, our ability to speak to people about sin in their own lives and how they can find redemption in the cross, that if we do not equip people to deal with the moral and cultural and social issues, they will not be able to get to the rest of the gospel message. That is a massively important point. And thank you for raising it. And may men and women of God rise up, and raise up others to make a difference. Thank you. Super important point.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it so much. All right. 866-3-4-TRUTH. Hey, Denny, thank you for your contribution on YouTube. We appreciate it. Let's go to Jesse in Twin Cities, Minnesota. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Say, I just wanted to say, I do feel like there is, it's a command in the Bible to correct the church. And so if we are going to be political, we first have to be able to deal with the problems in the church before we go out and criticize this government leader or that government leader. Because ultimately, the kingdom that we serve is not of this world. And so we ought to be able to correct things within the church. And there's always something to correct in the church. But I mean, to be able to speak out against this government official or that government official, I mean, we have to be able to make sure that our lives are pure before we can go out and, you know, tell someone else what they're doing wrong.
Yeah, Jesse, certainly repentance begins with us. You're right that if we are called to be salt and light, if the salt has lost its saltiness, if the light has been dulled, then of what use is it? Obviously. At what point, let's say you have a pro-abortion president who is pushing for more militantly pro-abortion laws and across America, you know, right into the moment of delivery, if the mother says, I can't have this child, you can terminate the pregnancy. At what point are we allowed to speak up publicly against that? At what point of what repenting do we have to do first before we are able to speak out?
Yeah, well, I would say, what sin is it? Do we have a sin of killing babies? Well, if we do, then we shouldn't be telling people, you know, don't kill babies, right? So this sort of idea of hypocrisy is definitely something to be avoided. So we don't want to, pick the sty out of somebody else's eye when we have a log in our own eye of the same sin.
Right, but in other words, if we are not guilty, our church is a pro-life church, our women are carrying their babies through, they're not terminating their pregnancies, what's stopping us from speaking out against the terrible sin of abortion? See, the only reason I, by all means, let us examine our hearts, and let us always be humble and willing to recognize sin in our own midst so we don't come across as some kind of self-righteous Pharisees. At the same time, let us be bold to speak. If we wait to reach the time of perfect purity, we'll never open our mouths. Hey, God bless. We will be right back. Thanks for calling, Jesse. We'll be right back on the other side of the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. The question we've talked about many a time on the show over the years, should pastors, leaders, Christian leaders speak more about cultural issues, political issues, speak less? Are we too politically obsessed? Are we too caught up with the culture? Are we too separated from the world? We're heavenly people. We're pie in the sky. That's what we're looking forward to. Can't worry about this world. What's our own mentality? When I think of it, you know, I try to boil things down into bite-sized concepts. I try to make things very, very simple so that they can be sound bites. We can grab hold of them. And often for me, it helps me to just think it through because I'm a debater. In my mind, I can go point for point both ways. Often before I say something, I process it in my mind as to how it could be understood this way, that way, to do my best to communicate clearly and not be misunderstood. And if you want to reject what I say, at least understand what I'm saying, right? But to me, it's really, really simple. Here's how I boil it down. For us as all believers, okay, the Great Commission is a call to go and make disciples. How do disciples live? That's the question, right? In other words, if you're a disciple living in the racist South during the worst times of segregation, how does a disciple live? If you're a disciple living in a real rough inner city situation with broken homes and families and kids without a dad, how does a disciple live? If you're living in an area where one part of your country has abundant prosperity and food enough for years, and the other part of your country is hit with a massive famine, what do disciples do? How do we live in this world? Here, I'll make it even simpler. You are you're a man, you're a gambler, you're an alcoholic, you're violent. Several times you've actually hit your wife. She's on the edge of leaving you. The kids are scared of you. You barely have enough to make it each week because of your habits. You get radically saved. How do you live? Well, obviously stop gambling and you stop drinking. You stop being violent and you become a good husband and a good father because you're a disciple. You live differently. Well, doesn't that then have a ripple effect on every area of life? 866-34-TRUTH. Going to go back to the phones in a moment, but let's just check for an update here on Twitter. I'm going to tell you the results of this poll so far. Should pastors and Christian leaders speak more or less about cultural and political issues? 69%. I don't know. These are people following me on Twitter, okay? So it's a certain background, but I'm just, all I can do is interact with those I can interact with, right? 69% said more on both. 14.5% said only more on cultural. 0.4% only more on political. That's interesting. 16% less on both. So more on both, 69%. Less on both, 16%. Very interesting. Very interesting. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Mark, you are on the line of fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. I was calling to more or less refute your last caller. I did call in before I heard the conclusion of your conversation with him. I think that you don't necessarily have to have all your ducks in a row to be able to offer wisdom. If that were the case, none of the Proverbs, but a lot of the Proverbs that Solomon handed down, especially the ones with the adulterous woman, you could accuse him of hypocrisy because he had lots of concubines and many wives, and that was ultimately what led to his destruction and the destruction of Israel after his reign. And I think even extrapolating now, I'm a man. I struggle with lust sometimes. I'm sure other men struggle with lust too. But I can still say to somebody, hey, lust is a bad thing. And
let me ask you this, Mark. I sure. said at the end of the call from Jesse in Twin Cities, Minnesota, that obviously we can't wait to get to a state of perfection, paraphrasing what I said, before we can address the world around us. Obviously.
Right.
That's self-evident.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But I don't think Solomon was writing Proverbs in the midst of amassing 700 concubines and 300 wives.
And
if he was, nobody would take it seriously. In other words, if the Pastor Joe was known for frequenting the strip clubs and picking up prostitutes, and he's getting on the pulpit Sunday morning speaking against the evils of sexual immorality, he's a hypocrite. No one's going to listen to him. So there is that aspect that's true to say that we can't be hypocritical. It's another thing
right.
to say, hey, I'm struggling with the same things you are. This is a problem. We got to address this problem. And then ideally to be able to say, hey, I did struggle with that. That was a stronghold in my life. I was a slave to alcohol or drugs or pornography or gambling or whatever. I was a slave to that. And Jesus liberated me. Yeah, I have to be vigilant and keep my guard up. I was a slave to that. And I want to speak to the destructiveness in the society. So the key thing, I think we agree, and we'd all agree, Jesse, you, me, that number one, hypocrisy is ugly, ugly in God's sight, ugly in the sight of the world, and destructive. On the other hand, God only has human beings to work through. And if we think, well, I can't address anything until I'm somehow perfect, yeah, you're right, Mark, we'll never get there. By the way, the book that I wrote that just focuses on holiness, Go and Sin No More, A Call to Holiness, which came out around 97, 98, I remember knowing that I wanted to write a book on holiness and help people walk in deeper holiness and understand the power of God's grace. There's a chapter in the book, it's all grace. Understand the dangers of legalism. I remember that I did not want to write that book until I had come into an even deeper place of personal holiness, an even deeper place of devotion to God, an even deeper place of intimacy with God. That was my desire. And when I felt the Lord stirring me to write it, I thought, but I'm not at that place yet. I was living a serious godly life, but certainly areas I wanted to be more devoted, more disciplined, holier in thought and attitude and so on, and more subduing of flesh in any different area of my life. So I was not living a hypocritical life, God forbid, but I was not at that level I wanted to be at to write the book on holiness, you know, or a book on holiness. And I felt the Lord say, you need to write this now, which was giving me the understanding, hey, you're always going to be on a journey. You will never reach that place you want to be at until you are resurrected in the world to come, in which case there is no sin, no temptation. That yes, we are growing in God, and yes, as leaders, we need to live a certain way. But I also felt, hey, don't kid yourself. Give what you have. Share what you have. And it'll help people. And don't be a hypocrite. In other words, make sure you're living out what you're writing in the book. But yeah, if we wait to reach that moment, you know, look, it's just almost every area of our life, work, ministry. Well, I'm not going to have a child till I reach that right moment of parity. Come on. The more kids you have, the more you keep learning about better parenting. You think, wow, if I could do it again, you know, 20 years later, I'd do it even better. But you can't get there 20 years later until you go through those 20 years. Follow? So let's understand that we do not want to be hypocrites before the world. It brings reproach to the name of Jesus. It makes the gospel look bad. It's an embarrassment. It's an ugly thing. And if you feel, hey, I need to be brutally honest, you know, maybe you're a pastor and you're preaching about sexual purity and you're not addicted to pornography and you haven't committed adultery, but you know, you want to make clear, hey, I've got to be vigilant and I have accountability in my life and my wife can know any website I've been to. And, you know, that's the software accountability we have because I know I could mess up like anybody else. Hey, yeah, absolutely. Be candid. And again, when we're talking about moral and cultural issues, getting back to our subject today, when we're talking about that, there is often an intersection with political issues. Let me give you an example. Okay. Running for school board in your community is political. Yes? There are elections. People vote. You have a certain government-appointed role. You have rules you go by. Then you vote committees and make decisions, and that can then trickle down to the school districts. You would agree that's political, correct? We all agree on that? That running for school board in your community is political. Okay. You think, well, we're Christians. We don't get, you know, we don't want to mix the gospel with politics. All right. So, bunch of you in your church, your community, you're very upset with transgender activism making its way through the school. You're very upset with your teenage daughter being required now to run races against biological males. And she was really hoping for a scholarship. She's number one in their school. Now there are two boys that are faster than her, but they identify as girls. She's now gone from number one to number three. And her best friend, who was number two, is now number four. She doesn't even finish in the top three. You're very upset with the fact that they get to share the locker rooms with girls because they identify as girls. You don't want that to happen. Well, it's policy in our county, that school policy. Well, who established it? Well, the school board. School board did. So do you now not get involved because it's political? Isn't that moral? Isn't that gospel, caring for your kids? Isn't that being salt and light? So why is there this magical line that exists and you can't cross that? It's one thing to have a political spirit and to be so politically minded we lose our spiritual focus. As I say in my book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, we need to put spiritual activity before political activity. But to think that as followers of Jesus, we don't intersect there. Why? Why would we think that way? All right, back with more of your calls. Hey, John, thank you for your contribution. We appreciate it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Sherry says this on Facebook, yes, Christians should be involved in politics and government. This is why we are in the mess we're in, because the church has been silent. Since 128, God gave us dominion to rule the earth. Now, the one thing I differ with there, Sherry, is that's dominion to rule over the animals and the natural world, not to rule over people. Adam v'Chava, Adam and Eve, were not told rule over people. They were people. That's human beings ruling over the rest of the world as the chief of creation, not human beings ruling over other human beings. In other words, I don't take dominion over someone else's life. The Great Commission is not to go and take dominion of other people's lives. The Great Commission is to go and make disciples of individuals, nations, through the gospel, through winning people to Jesus and showing them how to be followers of Jesus. And then from there, the impact flows naturally. Again, Great Commission is go and make disciples. The simple question, how then do disciples live? 866-342-THRIVE. One more quick poll update. We're up to 374 votes. Yeah, it's pretty similar. More on both, 68.4, less on both, 17.9%. If you missed my Twitter question, should pastors and Christian leaders speak more or less about cultural and political issues? My Twitter handle, Dr. Michael L. Brown. So the two L's in the middle there. Dr. Michael L. Brown, if you want to get involved with us on Twitter. All right, let's shift topics here for a moment and go to Rick in Texas, Sulphur Springs. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, hello?
Yeah, are you there? Hey, Rick, when's the last time you called?
I called recently. I call you all the time.
Ah, okay. Well, somehow you got past our call screeners because I thought Sulphur Springs, we definitely talked to you. Yeah, because we try to give folks a few weeks in between calls. But anyway, you're on the line. What's your question?
Oh, I'm so sorry about that. I didn't.
Not your fault. That's not your fault. That's up to our call screeners, but we had some shifts recently, and someone could fall through the cracks. So don't worry about it. It's just to be fair to other callers and leave room for others. But don't worry about it. I made the choice to speak with you, even though I knew we recently heard from Sulphur Springs. But anyway, what's your question, sir? Go ahead.
My question is just, all right, so there's a Messianic leader that the Lord used to convert me to Messianic Judaism, and his name is Zachary Bauer, and he has a YouTube channel called New to Torah. But there's just one thing that I disagree with him on. I do believe that Yeshua, the Messiah, is God as well, not only the Son of God, but he also is God as well as the Holy Spirit is as well. He says that Yeshua is deity, but he's not God. He is Yeshua. I don't understand. I just wanted to hear your remark on that.
Yeah, I have no clue what he means. Deity is God. We don't have multiple gods. We don't have multiple deities. There's only one true deity, the God that created everything. Everything else is a so-called God. Everything else has been created by God. So if he means Yeshua is not the Father, that'd be one thing, but if he cannot plainly say that Yeshua is eternal deity, uncreated, or the Son of God is eternal, uncreated, I don't know his ministry at all, but if he cannot say plainly that Yeshua, or more specifically, the Son of God is eternal deity himself, not created, that the Son is eternally God, then that's heretical. So I have no clue what he's saying or what he is attempting to say. So I'm no comment on him or his ministry, don't know anything about it, but just commenting on what you are relating, I've no clue what that would mean. And I would ask for explicit clarification. That's a very serious issue. Denial of the deity of the Son of God is one of the most fundamental heresies, one of the most dangerous heresies, and one that sometimes folks in Jewish ministry can fall into, out of somehow this idea that it's removing a stumbling block from the Jewish people. If you don't deny truth, you don't remove a stumbling block by denying truth. Hey, thank you for the call. Okay, my latest article is called Then They Burned the Bibles. I mentioned this briefly yesterday, but this is not a surprise at all, that in Portland over the weekend, protesters not only burned an American flag, they also burned a Bible. The question is, why? Why burn a Bible? What is so bad about a Bible? What does the Bible mean to these protesters? Right. Now, obviously, I read their minds. They didn't issue detailed manifestos, but it's not the least bit of a surprise to me at all. Not a surprise at all. Why? Because this is ultimately where the riots are going, where the BLM movement, in distinction from the truth that Black Lives Matter, where the BLM movement and Antifa and all these are going. This is an anti-God, anti-Christ movement. That's why it's no surprise that synagogues were vandalized, that church buildings were set on fire. That's no surprise. in the eyes of the rioters and the protesters, the Bible is associated with oppressive authority. The Bible is the manual for slave owners. The Bible is misogynist. The Bible is homophobic. The Bible is antiquated and destructive, and it must be burned. It must be removed. It's no surprise that this happened. When we talked about founders of BLM being radical feminists, queer activists, Marxists, I mean, that's the spirit of Jezebel. That's the same demonic junk that came through Queen Jezebel. And the fact that the BLM statement doesn't mention fathers and say a word about fathers. It's queer and trans is all over the document, but not a word about fathers, you know, what we believe and what's important. There's a reason for that gap and wanting to disrupt the nuclear family. There's a reason. And ultimately, what's behind the family unit? God. God's the one who ordained male and female. God's the one who ordained marriage. God's the one who ordained parenting. God's the one who set this up as the nucleus for the well-being of a society, healthy families under God's authority. And ultimately what's happening, friends, and it's going to get more and more overt, is people saying, we do not want the Lord to be our God. Friends, it's where this is going. I remember immediately after the Obergefell decision with the Supreme Court, when the Supreme Court ridiculously redefined marriage completely out of the realm of what the court should even be thinking about doing. When they redefined marriage, that I began, and so now this is, and the White House was lit up in rainbow colors, that friends, this was a very aggressive stance. This was now, quote, the law of the land. And suddenly I saw people come to another level of hostility. It's almost like they could now come out of the closet even more and say, yeah, you guys are going down. You bigots are going down. It's almost like they were emboldened. I thought, wow, Psalm 2, where the rulers of the world who are under the reign of the dominion of God and his Davidic monarch. So saying the ancient Israelite world, the kings that had been subdued by King David, like, we're going to break the yoke. We're going to break the yoke of Yahweh and his anointed. And that's the spirit of it. Again, as believers today, we are not trying to take dominion over the lives of others. Whatever society we live in, we work within that society. Here we have a democratic republic in America, so we work within that to advocate for what we believe is best. And we go through the system like everybody else. I wish everyone went through the system, but that's how we try to bring about change. We advocate for it. We seek to model it. We vote for it. We support it. We live it out in a host of different ways. But with our witness is a message of lordship. Jesus is Lord. God reigns. He is the King. And people who are in sin, even if they don't believe in God, even if they've been raised as atheists and the thought of religion is maybe that's you. It's like completely foreign. It just seems like fairy tales to you. That's how you've been raised. There is at root still a saying, I don't want this God to rule over me. I remember in college. Yeah, I remember where it was, Queens College. I was taking a class in biblical archaeology. There was another Christian brother, if I remember, his name was Ralph, and he and I were sharing the gospel with this woman who was teaching our class in biblical archaeology. And you know what she said? She said to us, I'm not willing to abdicate the throne. We thought, wow, she gets it. She understands that following Jesus would mean that she has to abdicate the throne of her heart to someone else who will now say, this is how you live. This is what's right. This is what's wrong. That's reality, friends. And by burning Bibles, people are saying, we don't want the Lord to be our God. And we don't want Christians to get their message out. We despise it and hate it. Read the article on stream.org or on our website, askdrbrown.org. And hey, friends, If you've got your copy of Evangelicals at the Crossroads, when we pass the Trump test, if you've enjoyed the book, take a minute, post a review on Amazon, share with others, let them know the book has been a blessing and helped you. Hey, we're going to have a really important conversation on tomorrow's broadcast. You don't want to miss it.